I'm going to read the text this morning, which is Matthew 23, 1 to 12. And I think you will be seeing it in New International, and I will read it in the RSV, which is very similar. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. Therefore, do whatever they teach you and follow it, but do not do as they do, for they do not practice what they teach. They tie up heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on the shoulders of others, but they themselves are unwilling to lift a finger to move them. They do all their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long. They love to have the place of honor at banquets and the best seats in the synagogue, and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces, and to have people call them rabbi. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher, and you are all students. And call no one your father on earth, for you have one father, the one in heaven. Nor are you to be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Messiah. The greatest among you will be your servant. All who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted." Pastor Wayne, come.
5 years ago, Joanne and I were traveling, back when we used to travel. We were on a series of trips that we had taken with a group of friends. 1 year we gathered together in Israel and Palestine and traveled around to the various important places in the olden days and in current days and learned together what it was like in that place. And as we reached the end of those 2 weeks, we said, "Hey, this is fun to travel with friends and to learn together. Let's do it again." And so we decided 2 years after that to get together in Turkey and sail the coast of Turkey and visit archaeological sites. We have peculiar friends who enjoy archaeological sites. So we would stop along the way and our friend Linford would take us on little tours and we would see these places. And we had such a good time, we decided to meet again and sail through the Roman, through the Italian islands and end up in Rome. To sort of complete that circle, that journey from Jerusalem to Rome. And so we did. 5 years ago, Joanne and I were a bit early on this trip. And so we arrived in Istanbul, tired, jet-lagged in the morning. And so in order to get our day going, we'd walked around town seeing the ancient sites. We'd seen some of them before, and so we were just mostly trying to stay awake. We were sitting late in the afternoon at one of the, right next to an obelisk that had been taken from Egypt and brought to Istanbul, just kind of staring. And a young man walks over to us. Now, you have this sort of thing in those cities, people who are going to offer to be a tour guide, if you want. They may or may not be qualified to do it, but sometimes it works out. He started talking to us. We talked to him some more. And after a while, he was not offering his services. I thought, well, maybe he's practicing his English. This is kind of fun. He's asking about us. We're asking about him. Had a nice conversation for, 20 minutes, half an hour. He mentioned that he works for his uncle part-time who has a rug shop nearby. And we're thinking, okay, here we go. Maybe he wants us to go visit his rug shop. And in fact, indeed, he invited us to the rug shop at the end of our conversation and said, come and meet my uncle. He said, okay, we have some time. Let's do that. Walked into the rug shop, but past all the rugs, up the stairs to the roof, to the balcony, which with one of the most beautiful views of Istanbul, you can find the Blue Mosque right over there. And his uncle met us and greeted us, ordered out some drinks and some snacks, and we sat there for another half hour or so just talking and getting acquainted. He told us about his hopes for this place. His family was Kurdish, and the Kurds were expected in this upcoming election to get maybe a 5 to 6% of the parliament in Turkey. And he was hopeful that he and his people would get a place that they could feel secure. Over the next couple of days, well, actually, after the end of the conversation, we said, you know, we got to meet our friends. They're arriving soon. And he said, oh, bring them over. We'll have a barbecue. We said, well, you know, they're probably tired. And sometimes I wish we had met him again because I think of him a lot. Over the next couple of days as we toured in Turkey, we met a number of people who were, well, their attitude about life was a bit different than we had experienced in 2 years before. 2 years before, they had been very upbeat. There were demonstrations in town that were like parades. People were having fun. There were parties going on. But now, people were afraid. They were afraid to talk to foreigners because they weren't sure if foreigners were going to tell somebody else about how they really felt about how things were going. And since then, in the last 5 years, the repression in Turkey has been, well, we don't know what. I wish I could find that man and his nephew because I'd like to know what happened with them. Things can change really, really fast. 5 years, 2015. That's one reason I remember this event. The other is that the hospitality, these two young men showed us. They didn't know us. We were foreigners, but they invited us into their home, gave us food and drink, and just wanted to get to know us. They were different religions. It didn't matter. That's what I like to remember. I remember learning as a kid, not exactly when, but I remember this fact that Sunday is the first day of the week, which made absolutely no sense to me. Because Sunday, well, it's the weekend, right? It's the end of the week, weekend. It feels like we're just finishing up things. But we're also beginning things. And so that transition happens often on Sunday evening to anticipate the week to come. So Sunday, our gathering on Sundays, is the end of something and the beginning of another. Simply, weeks, sometimes. For today, the end of October, the beginning of November. In other ways, perhaps, the end of something and the beginning of another. We don't know. And yet it seems appropriate to gather together to worship in that space. This is true in a weekly calendar sort of way that we transition from one week to the next on a Sunday. But it's also in a bigger sense. We are in a doorway. I've never known this to be more true than now, and yet I began hearing about it 20, 30 years ago, that we were in a doorway. Perhaps as we anticipated the year 2000, people were thinking, well, something is going to change, but there was something in our culture that was already changing. And we recognized that we were not going to be as people and as a culture, as a world, in the same place that we were before. Did we have any idea it would be like this? Phyllis Tribble, I always say that wrong, Phyllis Tickle, in a book called The Great Emergence, describes how every 500 years there is a transition in human culture, especially in the Christian world, but also in other parts of the world. Every 500 years there is a big change. 500 years ago was the Reformation. And Protestant and Catholic and split in Europe and in the rest of the world, things changed. 500 years before that, the divide between the Eastern and Western Church. 500 years before that, the rise of monasticism and the change in the cultural church. Every 500 years. So we're due. This is not just us then. Hearing that not only makes a lot of sense historically, giving us perspective, in a certain way it helps me, at least intellectually, relax a little bit to say, oh, this is not about us. This isn't about us. It's about the world. It's about what God is doing. God is working his purpose out as year succeeds to year. This change is happening. It's bigger than the church or the Mennonite church or the North American church. It's the world. We are at a pivotal point, and we nearly always are, at least in my lifetime. We who are followers of Jesus have been here before, at least 500 years ago, and 500 years before that. And our mission, if we choose to accept it, is to move from the past, what was, into the future, what will be. Also transition. This is All Saints' Day. And the beginning of Mission Month. Maybe in a kind of throwback, the elders have suggested that we become reacquainted with this idea. It has been, in my experience in the Mennonite Church, called Mission Month, when we paid attention to usually foreign missions. But also in the last number of years, how we work together locally. Maybe we pay a little less attention to Mission Month because we've tried to be missional. Another word I'm not sure is caught on, but the idea is that we are all on a daily and weekly mission and not just sent over there, but sent to where we live. But it's worth paying attention at least one month a year to how we're sent. And so we begin to pay attention to that in the next month while we celebrate All Saints' Day. Yesterday it worked out that Joanne and I could go visit my mother for part of the day. I drove out to Boswell, Pennsylvania. Sat in the living room and had some Wawa hoagies for lunch and got caught up and then decided to drive around and see some of the places that we were talking about. My great aunt had just died a couple of weeks ago at 107. She'd been thinking she was going to die for at least 7 years and finally did. So we went and drove by her house and then just a little further back the road, the house she grew up in, that my grandmother grew up in, and visited a couple of other places. Really fun just to reminisce and think about the saints who had gone before. And just this morning, thinking too, each of us thinks of different people, and it may even be random who we think about. It may be an aunt or uncle, it may be a grandparent, it may be just somebody that we knew who was at a particular point in our lives important. As I came in and I heard some of the songs being practiced for this morning gone over, I had a flashback. In the early 90s, the Mennonite Church, those of you who were a part of it at the time, was, you know, trying to write a new confession of faith, trying to draft a statement of what we believe together. And it was, if you remember, not all that easy to do. There was a committee working on it, and I think there was one person more than any other on that committee who was responsible for finding the verbal consensus of what we believed together. He traveled around the church listening to all kinds of groups and worked then in the committee to write down what we believed as much as possible. And so to celebrate that new confession, we invited Marlon Miller, who is the editor of that confession, to be with us in Virginia Conference for our annual session. I was involved in leadership at the time, and so I had the privilege of inviting or introducing him to our gathering of, I don't know, a couple of hundred people under a big tent in Virginia. And what I remember about that time is sitting up on the platform, thinking about all the tensions within the church over what we believed about the Bible, about what it means to follow Jesus, and how we were really, I think, getting to a place of transition. And one of the songs that was introduced was new among us. We sang it this morning, Praise. I will praise you, Lord. And as we're standing on the podium, I can still hear Marlon singing that song in French. He had learned it in Europe. So that was one of those moments when I feel as emotional about that time if he was not now one of the saints? I don't know. But we remember those people who have been important to us. And they're important to remember for a lot of reasons. And it might be especially important now, when I imagine that many of us are trying to figure out what is our place in our mission as a church, as people, as individuals. How do we respond to the call of God that we feel? Not always so strongly sometimes, but if we feel it strongly, we wonder how we can do it. How do we do what we want to do? And so we are easily feeling at times, speaking for myself, like there is a heavy burden weighing on us. How do we follow? And what happens is, in spite of us, it's not about us. We don't take it personally. Yeah, we do take it personally. If we're followers of Jesus, we have a mission. We have a call. We have things we can do. And so the text for today may seem like a weird one. For either purpose, for all saints, or for a mission. And yet what was happening with Jesus during this time, and what he describes, is how they, what has been, and what they are invited to do and be. Religious belief and practice has in their history been a burden to them. It has been a weight that holds them down, and he is inviting them to a new way of seeing things, a new way of being. Jesus invites them to only one expectation, not the weight of the law, but one expectation. Humble yourself and be a servant to God and to each other. Their task is to not toe the line to obey in everything. It's simply to serve each other a different way, a new way. So as we begin a mission emphasis, we also look back briefly at the saints who've gone before us. Those people who have perhaps died recently or in past number of years, or even those that because of their health were wandering. Their time has been. And our time will be. We are in this doorway. For the first 300 years of Christian history, Christians were a minority. We had as a people, relatively no authority or power. And it was probably easy, at least looking back in those 300 years, to see why they keyed into the servanthood idea, because often they were servants. They didn't have any power. And then things changed eventually where they did have power. And we, over those numbers of years, have come into some kinds of power ourselves. Money, influence, something that gives us some credibility, some lever on the world. And yet we are still called to be servants. And the way we have been missionaries has in the larger Christian circle not always been as a servant. Sometimes it has been alongside of Spain or Italy or England, where we have, speaking broadly, had a place of power where we could make people act the way we wanted them to behave. And that's inviting, right? If you have power and you can change the world, you want to change it, right? And yet we're still called to do it humbly as servants. About halfway through last century, my great aunt and uncle headed off to Tanganyika, a country which only existed for about 3 years, I think. It became Tanzania. But it was a big deal in this extended family for this couple to go off as foreign missionaries. My mother really admired them. But her mission, her call, was different. She became a nurse and met a farmer and then raised, in her mission impossible, 7 kids, which was its own kind of chaos, its own kind of mission. And those kids have now accepted their missions. Some went over there, some stayed here. We're part of that great cloud of witnesses that has been. One cold Thanksgiving, I took our daughters to a cemetery. Yeah, we like to visit archaeological sites and cemeteries. At least I do. But this is a cemetery. There's an old tombstone with a Daughters of the American Revolution flag next to this tombstone. And I introduced them to Jacob Blau, son of Christian, who had moved with his family from Bern, Switzerland, in 1750 on the ship Brotherhood to Philadelphia. And this Jacob Blau had been a private in the Pennsylvania militia in the American Revolutionary War from 1778 to 1782. Well, Jacob begat a son, Jacob, the first Mennonite preacher in Somerset County, Pennsylvania. I have famous ancestors. Jacob begat Jacob, who then begat Abraham, who begat Levi, who begat Margaret, who begat Dalton, who begat Wayne, who begat Elizabeth and Rachel. It was a fun little speech. I don't know if they remember it or enjoyed it as much as I did. Some of them in this line have considered themselves missionaries and would have called themselves that. Others were just simply on a mission. And we remember them. If we were in a different culture, this would not be new as far as a ritual for us. We visited San Antonio for a number of years, and it was always fun this time of year, and a real cultural experience in a part of the city. They celebrated Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. And it was more than a day. It was a street celebration. It was a fair. People would set up these, they didn't do kites, but they did these little displays where they depicted their ancestors. And we were invited as the general public to walk among their ancestors, which we do here. You've not been in this building for generations yet, though many churches do gather in the places where there's a cemetery next door that they remember who they are and where they are and who has gone before. We are sent. We are sent in this line. Most simply, as somebody said, beggars telling another beggar where to find bread, humbly, not over and under, not reaching down, but reaching alongside. With different motivations of why we share our faith. Some of it to simply be with other people. Some to share the joy. Some out of a compulsion. There are those, and there probably still are those, who want to share their faith because they feel like they want to save other people from eternal punishment, from hell. the possibility of that kind of punishment in the bitter by and by is, I think, something we leave to God for the most part. I bet it's been a while since you've heard a sermon on hell and all that. And you're not going to hear one today. Because we leave it up to God, mostly. And mostly if we are honest and have our eyes open, it's not a future possibility. For many, it is a present reality. And sometimes I wonder if we can see it from here and see it within ourselves. Estrangement from God, estrangement from each other, people not getting along. In the book, The Great Divorce, by C.S. Lewis, he describes the afterlife as people getting what they want, which is, in one region of reality, what they want is to be away from each other. And so, for him, hell is gradually moving farther and farther apart and not wanting to do with another person. That is the punishment, to be distant from God and from each other. And is that something we know is true from here? Many of us sense the call to change that reality, to help people escape from it, to look for an escape ourselves. And if we do rescue other people and we rescue ourselves by coming together, if we rescue people from a contemporary place of deadness and death and weariness and fear, it's not by proclaiming that we have the answers to it. It's by saying, we want to help. We want to be part of each other. We don't have all the answers, but we're going to reach out to each other. I'm not sure if our daughters necessarily see themselves as part of this great cloud of witnesses who have gone before, these ancestors that they could sit by this quaint old grave. I think they probably do. But I'm still proud of what they do. Just in the last little while, calling people to encourage them to vote, cleaning up a city park after a demonstration that got particularly wild, helping to resettle refugees, working with state government to help people who need helping. Just a few things. I'm proud of them and inspired by them because they are taking their place with us in this mission. They might not call this bringing salvation in theological terms, but in some ways I really think it is. If it is drawing people together as God desires us to be drawn together, it is God's salvation. Not giving the answers, but serving. And the things we do, you know them better than I do. We're going to hear later this month several stories from people who have served in other places. And you know what it is like to serve locally. I've heard some of your stories of where you connect. And God knows where we will go from here. It's hard to ignore on this day how we are divided in this country and this world. I'm tired of saying it. You're tired of hearing about it. But there it is. But I hope we are in a place where it will not get worse, but we can see somewhere through the door where it can get better. A transitional time, a time to move, even though it will take some time. There are many people who are suffering alienation, fear, insecurity, anger, and we feel with them. In the midst of this, I'm also sure that we are called. We have an opportunity. We are the bringers of God's good news of salvation. Not coming with answers. What kind of answers do we have? We've tried some of them and they're okay. Some of them we're not sure about. We're not coming with the answers. We're coming with a willingness. The greatest among you will be a servant. Those who exalt themselves will be humbled. Those who humble themselves will be exalted. We don't live with certainty, though we wish we had more assurance. If we're honest, we are here in the world where we are with sometimes a minimal faith, just a trust, just enough trust in God to get from one day to the next and to be alongside of others as we do it. A trust in God who has been with us and will be with us. We're not called to fix things. But we might want to, and we try. And some things we can fix a little bit. What we are called to do is ask, how can I serve you? How can I help? What can I do for you? That aunt and uncle who went to Tanganyika. I always like that name. Donald and Anna Ruth. They have been so beloved there in East Africa and here for the simple reason that when you were with them, you were the most important person there was. They paid attention to you. Didn't matter if you were a kid or an adult. Didn't matter. You were important to them. And I suspect that those 12 disciples who were going on their way after their time with Jesus, 20 centuries ago already, felt the same way. And yes, Jesus gave them some good stories to tell, some teaching, some ways of behaving. But what he gave them was a relationship, a connection, that they were important to him. He knew them by name. He knew them. And that's our mission, if we choose to accept it, to show the world that they, that we, that you are important to God. And the way we show it is that you are important to me. I get to represent God. You get to represent God. It's a big deal. Yet, that's all there is. All there is. You can know that God loves you because you know that I love you. That's how it works. That's our mission. That's how we'll get to tomorrow. Amen.